Studying some laws of Shmiras HaLashon, as we have in the past. And then we are going to jump into some of the laws of Pesach. So here we go. So we're up to the 11th chapter of Shmiras HaLashon, and I'll just share two ideas that he mentions. One of them actually quite relevant to the Pesach story, and that is something he quotes from the Mechilta. There's a pasuk in Shemos, in the 22nd chapter, 30th pasuk, which says, Uvasar basada trefa lo sochelu. We know that there are laws of slaughtering, ritual slaughter, shechita, and that's the only way we eat meat. What happens if you have meat that is not ritually slaughtered? What do you do with that meat? So interestingly, the pasuk essentially is telling us that you cannot eat it, but it does so in a very interesting way. It tells us that you should give it to the dogs. Why should you give it to the kelev tashlichun oso? That you should throw that meat to the dogs. Why do we throw that meat to the dogs? So the Medrash explains that there is a tradition that when the Jewish people left Egypt, almost out of respect for the Jewish people, the dogs did not bark. They remain silent. Dogs typically, especially if they don't know someone, many dogs will bark. If they see someone, they were silent. That's what the Medrash says, that God basically is looking out for them due to the fact that they did not bark. And what the Medrash then goes on to say is that there is a kal v'chomer, we could infer the following from there, and that is, if it's true for an animal that, so to speak, bites its tongue, that God is so careful to make sure that it's rewarded, certainly for a person who perhaps it's in some ways far more challenging to hold ourselves back, to refrain ourselves from saying what we shouldn't say, most certainly God will reward us as well. At some point, and therefore we learn it from the Pesach story, from the dogs remain silent, that they were able to be silent, so too every time that we hold back from sending a text, from responding in some way, from sharing something we shouldn't share, God will certainly look out for us as well. That's one idea he mentions, and then he quotes from the Vilna Gaon the following other idea. And that is that al kol rega verega sha'adam chosem piv, that every moment that a person holds back, that they, so to speak, muzzle their mouth again and refrain from saying something they shouldn't say, zoche le'or haganuz, they merit this.
Can you repeat the exact quote?
Sure. Al kol rega verega sha'adam chosem piv, that for every moment that a person muzzles their mouth, Zoche, meaning that they refrain, they hold back from saying something they shouldn't say. Zoche le'or haganuz, they merit this hidden spiritual light. She'ein kol malach uvriya yecholim neshayer, which cannot be measured even by angelic beings. It is this very mystical, elevated spiritual light that cannot be appreciated, cannot be measured, and is way too holy even for an angel. And I was reminded when I saw this about something else the Vilna Gaon writes elsewhere. He has a letter that he wrote his family on his deathbed. It was a letter that he wrote to his family that they should read after he passed. And he writes the following in this letter. This is an unbelievable idea, and in some ways connects some of the things we've been discussing last week. You know, being in a shul, as we all know, is so incredibly important. It's something that we all miss. It's something that we look forward to. And it's such a precious thing. Nonetheless, the Vilna Gaon, this is probably one of the most important Jewish thinker, rabbinic thinker of the past 1,000 years easily, maybe 500 years easily, okay? And he writes there to his children. He says, it is better to not go to shul. It is better to stay home if when you go to shul, you will be forced to overhear gossip, because the people sitting next to you are going to gossip. It would be far better to not go to shul at all. Those are pretty strong words, right? We all value incredibly the importance of going to shul. He says, better stay at home. If by going to shul, you are going to be overhearing people gossiping, if by being there, you're going to catch up on the latest about this person and that person, it's better that you stay at home. Okay? That's what the Vilna Gaon writes. And of course, what we aspire to, especially as we learn this book during this time, is that when we do, God willing, finally get back to shul, we will go to shul, we will be there with one another, and we won't gossip. Not only won't we gossip, we won't talk. We'll just spend time together, davening and growing together. Certainly not gossiping while we sit in shul. Okay. That's all for the Shmiras HaLashon. Let's now move on to what we said we're going to discuss tonight, and that is some of the measurements of the Seder. Okay, there are three things three food items that we eat during the Seder. And some people, for whatever reason, go ahead and they have the... What's that store called? They go ahead and they have the, you know, the large versions of everything. For some reason, I don't know why. And it really, it's overkill. And it makes Pesach non-enjoyable for people who just want to fulfill the mitzvah. Okay, so let's talk about what the mitzvah is. These are no leniencies because of this year. This is just straight Jewish law. And we'll talk about what are the appropriate leniency, what are the appropriate measurements of the different foods and drinks that we eat on Pesach. So what are the drinks that we have on Pesach? The first thing that we engage in are the four cups of wine, not all at once. We have them throughout the night, okay? And so we have four cups of wine. Okay, now, my bar mitzvah actually fell out during Pesach. So of course, what do I have like 4,000 of? Kiddush cups. I have a trillion Kiddush cups. And and the prettiest Kiddush cup, the nicest one, happens to be tremendous. Okay? It happens to be a really, really big cup. I could theoretically use it for the Kos Shel Eliyahu. But it's a really bad idea to do so. It's a bad idea to have a large cup, and I'll tell you why right now. This is what you need to do to fulfill your obligation of drinking the wine. And I should mention, it doesn't have to be wine. Ideally, we should drink wine. If you don't like wine, don't drink wine. It's supposed to be something that reflects our royal state. If you don't like wine, don't drink it. Ideally, they say drink red wine. If you don't like red wine, don't drink it. So you could drink grape juice instead, and that is totally fine if you don't like wine. How much of the wine or grape juice are you supposed to drink? Okay, so here's what you need to know. The cup that you are drinking from should be 3 ounces. Okay? This is the bare minimum. 3 ounces. 3 ounces is tiny. Okay? I am holding this little kid's cup over here. My kids always make fun of me. I take their cups. I don't know why. They're cool. I don't know. This is huge. This is way too big for, you don't need a cup this big. Okay? This is, some of you probably do a better job measuring than I can, much larger than 3 ounces. A 3 ounce cup is very, very small. Okay? So it's the smallest cup you have. It's a very small cup, it's 3 ounces, and the goal is to drink the majority. Ideally, you want to drink the entire cup if you can. If not, you drink the majority of that cup. That is really not a lot, okay? Now, if you end up deciding to use a larger cup, you're supposed to drink the majority of that cup. So do yourself a favor before Pesach, find yourself a smaller cup that is at least 3 ounces, which most cups are. And that's the cup you use for your four cups of wine. And therefore, you don't have to be drinking wine that you don't want to. If you like wine and you like drinking a lot of wine, that's fine. You could use a larger cup. But in terms of the measurements, all you need is a 3 ounce cup and to drink ideally all of it, but if not a majority of that cup. That's all you need to know. Now, parenthetically, you should know if you don't have a kosher for Pesach cup, like that, you could go ahead and kosher a cup. The way you would kosher a cup is simply making sure it's clean and then filling a pot with boiling water with gloves or with some other tool. You want to immerse it in that boiling pot, take it out, and now you can use it for Pesach. So you could kosher one if you want. If you don't have a really pretty cup, it's okay. Ideally, you want to use a nice cup. Don't use a plastic cup, meaning like a disposable cup, but anything else is totally fine. If all you have, and again, so for the people who don't want to be chugging grape juice or chugging wine that they don't like, go ahead and find a small cup, at least 3 ounces, drink ideally all of it, if not the majority. Great, any questions? Good, and again, Kol hamarbeh hari zeh meshubach. If you want to drink more, that's fine. But that's on you. It's not halachic. If you want to drink more and you enjoy it, that's totally fine. But you certainly have no obligation to do so. Okay, let's talk about matzah. Okay? Matzah, here's where people really go overboard. I remember those, some people have these measuring boards. Okay, they're a little bit stringent. Yeah, Michael, throw it out. Throw it out. Do me a favor. Throw it out, okay? I don't know. There's something about using measuring things at a meal which is supposed to be enjoyable and nice. I don't know. It's a personal pet peeve. I don't like the measuring plates. Use your eyeballs. Thank God all of us have vision. This is what you need to know, okay? There are 3 different times during the Seder that you eat matzah, okay? There is the very first time. There is the sandwich that we make. Okay? And then at the end of the meal, we eat matzah once again. Okay? Now, the first and last The measurement is a little bit larger than the middle one. The middle one is a lighter obligation, I guess we could say, and therefore there's a smaller amount that you need to eat. Okay, so just with me, number one and three are the larger amounts. The middle one is the smaller amount. What are the measurements? Let's do a show of hands over here. Who uses handmade matzah, the round ones? Anybody? Okay, who uses the machine matzah? Okay, some other machine matzah people. Okay, great. Okay, so we'll talk about that. Some of the density of the matzahs are a little bit different, but these are rough estimates. And again, you could eyeball it. You don't need to. You could just eyeball it. This is what you need to know. For the first and third motzi matzah and the afikomen, you want to have a third of a handmade matzah, just a third. That's very small. Okay, or a half of a machine matzah, of one of those square matzahs. Okay. It's not so little, but it's really not that much, okay? So again, for the first eating and the third eating, you want to have either a third of a handmade or half of a machine matzah. Cool? For the middle eating, a quarter of a handmade or a third of a machine matzah. If you're not writing this down, there's no way you're going to remember this. That's okay. Feel free to follow up. But again, good. Okay, so here we go. Once again, if you are going to be eating hand matzah, then for the first and third eating, you'll have a third. Okay, a third. And the middle one for the afikomet, for the sandwich, excuse me, there you have a quarter of a matzah. Very, very, very small. It's very small, okay? And again, if you have machine matzah, some of you this year cannot get handmade matzah. There's a bit of a shortage in some places. That's fine. They're both equally fine. There are actually some opinions that say the machine matzah is better to use. Some say the hand is better to use. Whatever. It doesn't matter which matzah you use. But if you're using machine matzah, it's a half a matzah for the first and third time you eat. Again, for motzi matzah and afikomen. And a third of a machine matzah for that sandwich. Great? Not that much, right? Not that much matzah? Good. Again, this is all for healthy people. If a person has certain medical issues, if you have certain medical issues, then obviously that's different. But you know, we're talking about on a regular to fulfill. Again, with all Jewish law, there is typically with many of these things there are specific measurements that are called an achila, the amounts for eating, and that's where these measurements come in. The reason I don't like those boards is because it becomes a little bit too structured. So again, you eyeball it, you break it up, and that's the basis for all of this is the fact that the Torah says we should eat matzah. Now, eating matzah, technically, you and I could interpret that to mean just eating a crumb of matzah, but it's understood that it should be an achila, what is considered a substantial eating, and these are the measurements that our sages assume to be considered a substantial eating. That's the background behind these measurements, okay? Now, with both the wine as well as the matzah, there is an obligation to recline to the left during this time. The reason we do so is it is a sign of freedom, okay? Now, this is what you should not do when you recline to the left. You ready? This is really awkward, okay? This is not comfortable, and this is really just painful, frankly. I just cleaned some part of my house. My back is hurting a little bit. I don't know what this is supposed to be. This is certainly not Heseba reclining and acting like a king or queen, okay? So don't do that. If you are suspended in the air, that is just not what you are supposed to do. What you're supposed to be doing is leaning. Of course, in earlier times, they had these beautiful couches that they had these couches they would sit upon, which most of the time is not practical. For the record, this is the only year that for many people, you could actually do this because there's unfortunately a lot of room at many of our tables, right? So if you want to go and pull up your couches, this would be the one time you could probably pull that off. I think it's a cool idea. My wife's 9 months pregnant. She's not going to go for it, but she's not reclining like that. But the point is that it is something to consider. But for the rest of us, if you're not going to do so, this is what you need to do. You're watching. You turn your chair to the left. Now I have something to recline upon, and this is comfortable. Do you see what I'm doing? Right? I'm not suspended in the middle of the air. That's not reclining. That is uncomfortable. That is certainly not what our sages had in mind. So if you're not going to use a couch, turn your chair to the left. And just sit back. You don't have to sit back like that. You could be straight for your back and you could sit like this. But the point is that you're leaning a little bit to the left. Do it in a comfortable position. The goal is that we are kings and queens. We do a lot of strange stuff at the Seder. This is not supposed to be one of them. This is supposed to be relaxing. So do it in a position that you could relax, not suspended in the air. Okay, that is just a little a side note. Okay, also parenthetically, I should just point out. Again, unfortunately, this year it's not going to be so practical. But if you do have a large Seder, you know, sometimes it takes forever for there to be a distribution of matzah and the right measurements of matzah. So my brother joined us in Baltimore two years ago. My brother lives in another city, and he taught me a little trick that he does. It might work for some of you. And he literally creates bags full. Like plastic bags, takes like a whole box of bags, little baggies, and prepares individual packets of matzah so that instead of waiting for everyone to be distributing it, again, if you have 10 people at the Seder, 15 people, 20 people, 25 people, it takes forever. So all you do is you basically put it in the bags beforehand. You put the measurements that you think is appropriate. You give it to everyone ahead of time. When everyone goes to wash their hands, you drop those bags by their seat, and then you make matzah, you make the bracha on the matzah. Ideally, they should get a little bit from the matzah that you made the bracha on, but they could start eating and could just pass out a tiny little bit for them to partake as part of their regular portion. But that way, you did it ahead of time, so no one's just waiting there staring at the wall while you're breaking up matzah for 20 people. Okay, but again, unfortunately, this year for most of us, there's not going to be such a long wait between the bracha and the eating. Okay, that is. So we talked about wine, we talked about matzah. Let's talk about marar. There are two times that we eat marar during the Seder. Essentially, we're eating 1 ounce worth of marar. Now, there are different types of marar, right? There's that white horseradishy stuff, which will, depends on how fresh it is, make your mouth burn. You do not need to have that. You could have romaine lettuce, and that is just as fine. It doesn't have to be spicy. Parenthetically, the medieval commentators explain that the symbolism of the romaine lettuce, right, doesn't seem to be a very bitter, you know, it's not exactly sweet, but it's certainly not bitter. They suggest that the symbolism is that in some ways it represents the development of the servitude. That initially, just like the stalk of leaf, it starts off soft on the outside, and then it gets harder and harder till you get to the stalk. The idea is, if you read the passages in Shemos carefully, you'll notice that first they start off with, you know, taxing the Jews, and then eventually ramping it up until we get to the Avodas Perach, the very difficult work that took place. So again, each time you're basically having an ounce. If you want to have an ounce of horseradish, cool. That might be a lot of horseradish, especially if it's fresh. I wouldn't recommend it, but if you could handle it, for the Svardim here that have different taste buds than us Ashkenazim, maybe that works. But for most of us, that might be a little bit challenging. If you want to use romaine lettuce, again, you could just eyeball just one big leaf. Usually is sufficient. Two stalks of leaf of lettuce without the leaves on it is about 1 ounce as well. So those are the measurements. Those, you don't have to do anything more than that. Again, and that is all you need to do. Again, you don't recline while you eat the marar, but those are the measurements for the wine, the matzah, and the marar. Again, I'm going to repeat the marar just one more time. You're eating 1 ounce worth of marar. If you have the horseradish, so again, it's about 1 ounce, like that's one of those little shot glasses worth of horseradish. If you want to not have 1 ounce worth of horseradish, you could use romaine lettuce. Some people mix the both together. And if you're using romaine lettuce, you could have one leaf. One large leaf is essentially 1 ounce, probably a little bit larger. Or, you know, some say 2 stalks of the lettuce without the leaves. That's also about 1 ounce. Again, eyeball it. You don't need to start measuring everything. You could use your judgment. They didn't have these papers back in the day. Use your judgment as to what is considered 1 ounce, and that those are the measurements of your Pesach Seder. Tomorrow, what I'd like to do is talk about some of the bare minimums you need to do in terms of the reading of the Haggadah. We are going to have some classes on Thursday about sprucing up our Haggadah, whether we're alone, whether with young children, and all of that. So we'll talk about tomorrow night, very briefly go through some of the bare minimums. If you need to skip around a little bit, what are the most important things that you really want to pay attention to as you go through the Seder? And that is it for tonight. Okay, if you have any questions, feel free to take yourself off of mute. Or ask any questions. I'm actually going to take you all off of mute. We're going to do what we've done in the past few weeks now. We're going to say a chapter.